Bismillah. With God's assistance, we begin. The Muslim American Media Alliance presents Meet the Members. The Muslim American Media Alliance members are professionals, organizations, and businesses in the media industry with a collective mission to share information and network. And now, your host, William Kareem.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this edition of Meet the Members. My name is William Kareem, and we have a great show and a great guest for you this afternoon. But first, let me tell you about the Muslim American Media Alliance. We are a group of Muslim professionals, organizations, and businesses in the media industry with a collective mission to share information, network, and present the stories of Al-Islam and Muslims in America through resources in print, music, film, radio, video, and new media. The Muslim American Media Alliance was founded to organize Muslim media outlets. The Muslim American Media Alliance has come together to cover the news, opinions, and events of the day and to share our unique point of view with America and the rest of the world. Some of our members include the Muslim Journal, Aliyah TV, Akifa Multimedia Productions, American Muslim 360, A New Day for Al-Islam in America, Aziza Magazine, Salamian Speaks on YouTube, Dawah International, Famico Publishers, Omar Regan, International Omar Regan, Taqwa Productions, and Umma Stream World TV, and of course, that social media network, Umma One, and also the social media network, You Are a Creator. This afternoon, what we have for you today is an interview with a brother who is very active in media production. He is at Georgia State University. He's an entrepreneur, a family man. He's married and has some children. He's actively involved in the production of film and helping people with film. But he has also done a documentary called Hibana. We're here to talk with him this afternoon, and that is our brother, Amir Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Meet the Members, my brother.
Wa alaikum assalam. Happy to be here.
Yes. So listen, you've been very active. As far as being a member of MAMA, we're happy to have you as such, and we wanted to just take some time to talk to you, to fill in the circle, about who Amir Muhammad is and what it is that Amir Muhammad is doing in the field of media. So can you just basically just give us an overview of who Amir Muhammad is and what you're doing in media?
I guess what best describes me is I'm an auteur. I'm in film, but it was by way of I started off as a music producer when I was like 15, 16 years old. And my story is I didn't like what a lot of the hip-hop artists was rapping over my beats. So instead of working with them, I decided to become a musical artist myself. It's producing and being a musical artist is in my family. I have roots in the Gap Band. Some of those members are my family members. All through the music industry, plenty of family members is just in entertainment, period. And so after having a few albums, I saw the necessity of moving images, not only for my own songs, but also the things that I saw on television and in music videos and the shows that were coming out, that there was a necessity for a different type of mind, a different type of thinking in moving images. So then I went back to school to finish up a degree, actually changed my degree to film. And been loving it since. Shot my first documentary less than a year after graduating, and it's doing well in the film festival circuit right now.
Yeah, that documentary that you mentioned, and I'd love to have this conversation with you because I also went to school for film and media studies, and I didn't get the opportunity to actually go into that field because I was asked to participate in the field of audio, and I took up the challenge. But I do understand the whole process as far as film and film festivals and what it actually takes to do that. So I was quite impressed, and I am quite impressed at this moment to hear that you went from school and went right into your art, because many times our artists don't do that. And I noticed that one of the important moves that you made was to go outside of the country to do a documentary as opposed to doing a documentary inside the country. Can you tell us, why did you do that?
Well, one of my main mentors, main teachers at Georgia State, he told me and he told the rest of the class, me and him had a one-on-one conversation, but he told me that, but this he expressed in front of the whole class, he said when he was in film school, most of the people that he went to school with, out of his whole film class, there may be two or three of them that are still in film, including him. And the reason why that is, most people, they get out of school and they take on a job. And if you take on a job, it takes up a certain amount of time and it takes up creative energy, creative space in your mind. So if you take up somebody else's job, or even if it's in film, you're doing what's in their mind, not in your own. And he asked us and me specifically not to do that. For the student that he felt, and he only picks you in his classes because you only could get 15 people to a class, he would only pick the ones that were real motivated. He felt had the creative talent or were motivated enough to continue in film. So he warned against that, and I just took heed to his warning. While I was in school taking those classes, I was going back and forth to Dominican Republic because of a love interest. And from going back and forth, it started off, I was taught, you know, always keep the camera shooting. So I kept going back and forth, and really originally it just started off as me just taking footage of what I was doing out there and family out there, just different things, just the beauty of the country. But then as I kept going, I could see that there was a phenomenal story that needed to be told. So then I started going back to shoot for that story. And it took me about 2 years to do it, starting while I was in school and then finished before a few months after I graduated. So that's how it all went, me actually going back and forth for that reason.
So I see that you told me when we had the discussion that you went to the Dominican Republic and that there are Muslims in the Dominican Republic, and it was news to me. I mean, it's not like I'm surprised. I'm not. But it's just not common knowledge. It's not a promoted knowledge. I just, like, at one time, I didn't know that there were Muslims in Haiti. They have a Muslim community in Haiti. I just happened to hear them on the radio. They were the guests on a radio program, and it was just fascinating to hear the story. But while you were there, did you connect with any Muslims? Did you visit the masjid over there? What can you tell us about that?
The Muslim community over there predominantly is from foreigners, people who came out. The masjid there, the one masjid in the main capital, it's another masjid in another major city, Santiago, but in Santo Domingo, the main capital, which is where I frequent, that masjid is mainly foreigners and Indians, Pakistani, and you have local Dominicans that are there. But when you have everybody coming in and they come from different backgrounds, you know, there's differences in opinion of the way certain practices and different things like that. But the Muslim name there amongst Dominicans is, not only is it growing, but you have to understand, when you're an island, the island lifestyle and what, I won't say one particular group of people, but when people come in and dominate your country, especially tourists, and you have to understand that in those islands, a lot of the women are used by men, by tourists, and they specifically go there for that. So the women are used to men coming in, saying stories, they're going to be back, and then they leave. So they're used to, let me get from you what I can, and then when you leave, you know, I got what I wanted from you, you got what you wanted from me, that type of mentality. But what they're learning about Muslims is starting to spread that they actually come in and they marry you. They're not like regular tourists. That word is spreading. That spreads out amongst that whole neighborhood.
Now, you know, that's a beautiful story, number one, but there are two points that I want to, you know, really get to with that. Number one, the women are the ones that spread the news. Some call it gossip.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point is, and especially when it's a good thing, you know, a woman wants people to know there's some good that has happened to her and the way that she came about that good. So I could definitely see that being the situation. The other part is you being an African-American Muslim. Now, you are African-American Muslim, and let's talk about that for a moment. How long have you been a Muslim? What community have you come up in? And what has been your experience of Islam personally in your life?
Well, I was born and raised Muslim. My parents converted when they were young, came up through the nation, and then
Nation of Islam?
Yes, and then they moved towards, they went through the transition with Imam Wafdi Muhammad's community. And I grew up in different communities, but mainly Imam Wafdi Muhammad's community, and that's the community I identify with. I live in Atlanta, and I go to the Atlanta Masjid that also follows the leadership of Imam Wafdi Muhammad. That's my foundation. That's my ground. I love that community. I think like, you know, that community, and that's home to me. Though I'm close with many other African Americans that don't identify with that community, but that's my community. That's the one I identify with. And my experience being Muslim, I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of good. I've seen a lot of bad growing up Muslim in America. I think we're striving. I think there's some things that we need to correct, focus our attention on, especially families. But I think we're striving, and I think just naturally, organically, we're gonna get to that Muslim community that we see and we know that we should have in America and abroad.
But have Islam motivated you as far as your educational aspirations are concerned and your participation as a community person? And you also told me that you've done some work with Georgia State University. So before you tell me about the work, we talk about the work you do at Georgia State University, just how has Islam helped to develop you as a participant in the community and towards your scholastic endeavors?
Well, I think Islam itself pushes education and science. A lot of people don't realize that, but it really, the nature of things has always been talked about throughout my whole life. And you see a lot of Muslims, in a lot of conversations that I have with a lot of Muslims, it's really trying to figure out things, how things work, why things are this way. It's from a scientific approach. And so I think just by being active and seeing issues that affect your heart in a certain kind of way pushes you in a certain direction as a Muslim. And you seek out the knowledge to better those situations, fix them however you want, but you seek out the knowledge. And that, I think, leads you towards school. It leads you towards academia. So from there, it just... I just love learning all kinds of subjects. And somebody told me this before that I'm good in a lot of different things, but if I don't focus on one of them, then I'm not going to succeed because I'm getting pulled in too many different directions. And it's funny because I ended up doing film, and I called this person back and told him, see, I told you I can do all these things at the same time, and I can put them all in one film. So that's how I've been able to harness my energy, is to be able to pull from all of these different things and put them into film. So that's what led me there and led me to staying at Georgia State.
That's very good, brother. Listen, you're dropping some jewels. I just want you to know right now. So if people listen to this program, they are going to, I mean, I'm shaking my head because I bear witness to the words that you are speaking. Now let's talk about your endeavors at Georgia State University. First of all, what high school did you graduate from, and why did you choose Georgia State University?
Well, I went to two different high schools. I grew up in Los Angeles for the first 15 years of my life, and I was out in Rialto, California. I went to a school called Eisenhower High School. Then when I moved to Georgia in the 10th grade, I went to Redan High School, and I graduated from Redan. And I got into USC in L.A., and I got into Georgia State. I actually was highly recruited from just about every college in the nation. My first choice was Princeton, but I actually couldn't pay the Georgia State, I mean the USC application. When they recruited me, it came first, and I paid $250 for that. My mom paid it. And then when the Princeton one came, it was $400, and I didn't have no waivers. And she was like, I'm not paying that $400. And though I was working, I just couldn't pay for the application. I would have got in, and because they were recruiting me, but I just couldn't pay the application. But that was actually my first choice. And I didn't want to go back to L.A. I had a choice. It was really pulling on me because actually where USC is, that whole neighborhood around there, I grew up around that area. So I know the whole area and had plenty of family members there, but it was something about Georgia that the Muslim community especially is what really tied me to Georgia, and I stayed. I ended up going to Georgia State strictly because of that. It really almost maybe 90% of the decision was because of the Muslim community. Had I actually paid for that Princeton application, I would have went to Princeton.
Wow. That's deep, brother. You know, that's really something on a number of levels. First of all, I never even knew that application fees could actually be that expensive for $200 and $400, but I'm not surprised I will say that. But I do understand also the relationship that you could have and that you do have with the Atlanta Masjid of Al-Islam in Atlanta, Georgia, because it is a great community. I've been down there a number of times, and they have some wonderful believers, and it's a 24-hour masjid. It's open 24 hours. That's a phenomenal, number one. It's very beautiful, number two. I like the design. I like the location, that it has its own mall, that it has that it is the host to one of the great Clara Muhammad schools in the nation. The Clara Muhammad School of Atlanta and the W.D. Muhammad High School. And there's the great imam and also the assistant imam who takes people on the Hajj, I think the Hajj pros, is that right?
Yes, Imam Suleiman Hamid.
Yes. And also, as a matter of fact, it was from Georgia that the Muslim American Media Alliance was started and created with the great brother from Taqwa TV, Hassan Shakir, and his wife, Habiba Shakir, and our sister down there, Sister Zakia Omar, and Toure Muhammad, you know, all the great work that they have done as far as media, especially Hassan for the last 25 or 30 years in doing video production and recording the history of our community. Let's talk about the work that you've done at Georgia State University, because first of all, you told me that, you know, you assist students in film production.
Yeah, I was a film student. My major was film. My minor was psychology. I'm actually still taking classes because when you do a minor, you come so close to a major that, and I love psychology. You can't do film without psychology. A camera is actually based off the theory of shooting is based off of psychology. It comes a lot from Freud. So I'm finishing up a psych degree right now, in addition to holding several positions at Georgia State.
Right. But now some of the work that you're doing as far as assisting the students there.
Yeah, I I have three positions at Georgia State. I edit films and shoot films. Edit and shoot programs, events, different things that Georgia State is doing. I mean, so much with so many different countries, domestic people come in, international people come in all the time. I'm talking about ambassadors, dignitaries, presidents, all through Georgia State. Mostly a lot of people don't know that, but Georgia State is connected to everywhere. And a lot of it has to do with Hartsfield-Jackson Airport being able to fly directly from almost anywhere in the world directly into Atlanta. So New York is actually losing a lot of business, and people are setting up shop in Atlanta. So Atlanta is, quiet as kept, is going to have an international surge soon. It's already starting, but most people may not know that. If you could get in ahead of time, this would be the time, because they are coming. They're setting up more consulates. And I only know this because that's one of my jobs that I do there. The other one is I assist students with helping them with, they come into a lab, and a Mac lab, and I assist them with not only film, but also music. So we have a recording studio at Georgia State. I help them out with that if they need help, and as well as their films and pretty much any graphic design, different things like that. I'm aware of kind of how to do a lot of different things, animation, all kind of stuff. I have some knowledge in those things. And then as well, I teach the faculty and students Final Cut Pro X. At our school, we have different people that teach different software programs, and I'm fluent in Final Cut, or proficient in Final Cut Pro X, one of the very few, because it's a new software and a lot of people are upset with it. So
yeah, man. I mean, Final Cut Pro X is not an easy program. As a matter of fact, it was lambasted in the media as not being a good program. And everyone was saying that the creators of Final Cut Pro, the Final Cut Pro series, which has gone all the way up to Final Cut Pro 7, had that they made such a divergent detour with the creation of Final Cut Pro X that the people who were, you know, so stuck on Final Cut Pro found it difficult to make the transition. And I think that's why they didn't like Final Cut Pro X. But what can you tell us about Final Cut Pro X? Tell us something about that, and maybe it'll inspire some people to actually, you know, get involved with it.
At first, I felt the same way as any other filmmaker that came from Final Cut Pro 7. Final Cut Pro X doesn't even read your Final Cut Pro 7 programs. And
that's
I mean, that's just, you have, people have made whole films in Final Cut Pro 7. So
exactly.
For it to be the same company, that's upsetting in itself. And that was difficult. But I went through it, and if you're familiar with iMovie, which is another program that I assist students in, I knew both. So I had to retrain myself to not think in the form of Final Cut Pro 7, but think more in the form of iMovie. And once I started, slowly but surely, it took me about 6 months to finally, where I felt comfortable in, this is the program that I'm going to use to do my films in. But it's difficult. It's a lot of things you have to learn, and a lot of, you have to reshape your mind, and that's hard for a lot of people to do. Once you've learned, because I still know, Final Cut Pro 7, like the back of my hand, and I have shortcuts. I can edit a film, I mean, just way faster than the average person, but not even comparable to Final Cut Pro X. I can edit a film. If a film took me, just a short film, let's say a five-minute film, and on average that may take me a few hours, maybe 3 hours to do. In Final Cut Pro X, I can cut that down to somewhere around 30 minutes.
Wow, that's big. That's big.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. Huge difference in the amount of time that you spend. So
that's big.
Yeah, oh, it's huge because you don't have to render anything. Any camera that you bring in, any SD cards you bring in, it reads that footage immediately, and you don't have to wait. In Final Cut Pro 7, you have to wait. You got to render those things so it can be compatible.
That takes a lot. That rendering takes a lot of time, right?
It takes a lot of processor speed, too, if your computer's not up to par. But
yes,
it's more than worth it once you know it. Once you know it, there's still some things here and there that I'm finding that Final Cut is putting out plugins for, because as you go along and you really start getting into the really difficult aspects and want to be really creative, there's a lot of creativity that you can use, but it's also some things that you may find that are more difficult to do in Final Cut Pro X than it is to in Final Cut Pro 7. So, but they're putting it out there little by little as they find, as people let them know that there's issues, their problems or the things that they would like to see, they put it out there. But as it stands right now, phenomenal program, no question. At first, I didn't feel that way, but phenomenal program.
Alhamdulillah. We've just covered some of the things that you actually participate in, as far as you being a Muslim, as far as you being a scholar and assisting other students and some of the things that you're doing. But now let's talk about let's transition into the creation of the documentary that you did, Dubana. Let me just ask this question. Did you do that in Final Cut 7 or did you do it in X?
Final Cut Pro 7.
You did that in 7.
Yeah.
And you said that it took you 2 years.
Yes.
With that, tell us how you actually, you did tell us some of the things about, tell us about Dubana. What was the original thought, the idea, just a basic base of what it's about. Tell us a little bit about Dubana and how that actually came about.
Well, I went down there and I was taking pictures. Then I went down there with my DSLR camera and started shooting. And
which camera were you using?
Canon T2i.
Okay.
And kit lens. I went down there and I have another lens as well, but mainly off the kit lens. And I went down there shooting, and then I wanted to, because every time I went down there, I had friends, people ask me, how is it? And I'm showing them pictures, and I'm like, you just can't understand the beauty of this country until you actually come. You have to see it. And so I was doing a lot of the shooting just to capture a lot of things. Okay, the story is wrapped around. I wanted to tell the culture, but wrap it around, like you have to have something that catches people, where it be a love story, a horror, or something like that. So it's a love story, and it's wrapped around a baby that's about to be born.
Let me just say this here. Maybe I didn't want to frame the question like that, whereas you had to tell the story. But I think that you did say that it was the beauty of the country that was really the motivation that actually, motivated you to do it, right?
Yeah, but I can give you a synopsis without telling the story.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Okay, so while you're following, because it's a story about me and my wife, the baby that's about to be born, and the way that the story is told is you learn the country and the culture of the country in the context of this is what this baby is about to be born into and the beauty of what she is about to be born into and the dynamics of and that encompasses not only the country but how her mom and dad got with each other. So you see all of that before she's born. As you're going through the process, so you see as my wife's stomach gets larger and you go through that whole process, but you see all of these different trips and us traveling around the country and the day-to-day life of what the average Dominican does. You see all of that. And it's a beautiful story. It's a twist in it, but it's a beautiful story. It's, a lot of people who see it, I mean, you really get into the story of the film.
Once you finish the film, then, because you've already told us that you told us the story, you told us that, you know, some of the equipment that you used on it, and you told us that you actually finished it. What motivated you to take the next steps as far as, well, let me ask you this. Where did you show it first? Where was the first showing before you, because you showed it first before you actually put it on the film circuit market, right?
Well, I showed it to some friends because I've just been trained. It's part of my training to, you may think that you have a good work that you've done,
yes,
but until you basically give your authorship away by letting other people see it and give critiques, because once you put it out there to the world, it's done. It's out there to the world. So I gave it to my film teachers first and had some of my friends who are not film critics see it and give me a real critique. So the movie, after I was finished, it probably was changed about 4 or 5 times before. The original film was like an hour and 35 minutes. And
yeah,
the complete film, when it was finished, was 70 minutes. So
that's
dramatically.
I
had to cut a lot of stuff out after, but with good reason, after, especially when my teachers gave me their critique, because, you know, that's what they do. It's a little bit different. Some of the things that my teachers said and some of the things that my friends said were the same, but my teachers could go into greater detail on why this and why that. So I changed it about 4 or 5 times before I finally finished and said, this is the final work. I'm not changing it anymore.
Right. So this is not considered a short.
It's a feature documentary.
It's a feature documentary. And so it's a short feature. You said it's like 30 minutes?
No. It's 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Anything above
60 minutes is a feature. And
okay,
it's, even though it's a documentary, anybody will tell you who's seen it, it does not feel like a documentary. It actually feels like, that's one of the unique things about the film, it feels like a narrative film, but it's actually a documentary.
That's interesting. That is very interesting, brother. That is very interesting. Because, I mean, I actually get that. Because it's a real story. It's a true story.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's what a documentary is. It's not fiction. That's beautiful. That is beautiful. Okay, so you showed it, and then
But the first premiere where it premiered was actually at Georgia State's film theater. I mean, that for me, that was it was an honor for me that they actually allowed me to do it. But that's what I wanted, because that's home, and you know, I'm loyal like that. So it was important for me to have it somewhere where, you know, I feel like, you know, that's home. My choices were either Georgia State or the Atlanta Masjid. And Georgia State had their theater, so they allowed me to do it.
That's beautiful. So now, after you do it, what was the response?
The response was, great. I have all of the footage of people's responses right when they came out of the theater, the different things that they said. But it's interesting because, and I understand the nature of my film. I'm fully aware of what my film says and what it's doing. So from, I guess, the non-Muslim community, it's received, everybody receives it well. But the story is compelling, and they want to see the story again, talk about it, because it makes you talk about a lot of things, because it addresses environmental issues, it addresses love, interest, It addresses religious differences. It addresses abortion. All of that, it addresses language barriers. So there's a lot of things depending on, you know, like it can catch so many different people so many different ways. But
yeah,
the story itself is just like, whoa, nobody would ever expect somebody to tell this type of truth and tell it in the way that I told it. People are like, they're both in shock, and they want to see it. Like, I'm telling you, I've had judges at film festivals tell me, pull me to the side and tell me, I gave you all 10s. That movie was phenomenal. I mean, it's amazing to hear somebody actually break the rules and come pull me to the side and actually say that. Because
wow,
you never know how people are taking your stuff until, you know, you put it out there, and then it's like, wow, they're responding in the way that I would have wanted them to respond. And that's what's been the response. But the Muslim community, it's a little bit different. That can go, like, it's kind of polarizing. It can go one way where people are like, man, that's a phenomenal film. And then it can go a whole nother way from people just saying, ugh, I'm just done.
Right, I got you. So now, that's a beautiful thing, but that's what you want your project to create anyway, because these creative arts are subjective to the people that actually watch them, and people take them in different ways. And it says a lot when a lot of people take your message in one way. It could say that, you know, they're just blowing smoke. You know what I'm saying? if everybody said it the same, oh, yeah, hey, yo, it's great, it's great. If everybody said it's great. But when you get both sides of it, and you know that people actually took the time to watch it, and that it comes away with different opinions regarding that, that's the sign of a great movie and a great piece of art. Now, why did you get into the film festival? I see that you won a couple of awards as far as festivals. How many have you been in?
Well, I've actually been nominated for one. The other ones, it's interesting. The major film festivals, I got rejection letters from those. And
when you say the major film festivals, what are
I mean,
ones,
like the,
who are they?
The big name ones. I didn't put it in the Sundance. I should have, but I did put it in the Toronto. I submitted to the Toronto Film Festival. IDFA, which is out in Netherlands, the Dubai Film Festival, and all of those. I had 3 rejection letters before I got my first nomination, and that was from the Bronze Lens Film Festival in Atlanta, which is an African-American film festival, which for me, it was, I just felt like, wow, that's, maybe it was meant to be, you know, Atlanta's home, so, maybe it was supposed to be like that. And the funny thing is, the second one that I'm almost for sure, well, I can't say, I never know. You never know, but I think that I will be nominated for is the Pan-African Film Festival, which is in L.A., which is my second home, born and raised. So it couldn't have been written better. I haven't won any specific award for it yet. I just was nominated, but there's a lot that you learn from one being nominated and from going to film festivals. Like, a lot of people may think you need an award to really get to where you want to go, but I promise you, the nomination is equally as important. And in some ways, it can be more important. You have to get your foot in the door before you even think about winning a race. You got to get your foot in the door. And the nomination validates your film. And there's a lot that you can actually do from that validation. Because forever, once you're nominated, you can always use their logo on that particular film. And that the more and more logos that you can use, the more and more that you can, the more, I guess, prestigious or validation that you have for your film. And there's other thing that goes into winning film festivals. So I'll give you an example. at, I don't want to say the name, but at a particular film festival, because I don't think this is a negative thing, but this is what happened. All the awards went to the filmmakers who had at least one celebrity in their film. I don't care if it was a D-list celebrity, F-list celebrity, it was a celebrity in their film. And those are all the people who took awards. Those aren't necessarily, if you talk to the filmmakers and to some of the audience members, was the best films, but those are the films that got the awards. And
yeah.
You have to understand that a film festival has its own agenda as well. They recognize you as a great filmmaker, but they definitely have their own agenda. So if you were, you know, running a film festival and everybody that came in with celebrities, and you gave all those people awards, when your film festival is over and you put that video out as to what happened that year, and you can edit films where all people are seeing is celebrities, that's going to make your film festival look prestigious. That doesn't necessarily
right.
mean that those films are the best films. It just makes your film festival look prestigious. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you got to understand at the end of the day, things are about, they're about creativity and all of that, but they're also about money as well and getting
right.
people to fill those seats. So, you know, I learned that from actually going to film festivals. But what you get, where you can build from is all the networking. When you go to all the workshops and meet all the different filmmakers and all the people that are in different aspects of the business, you can actually build your team from people that are proficient and professional at what they do. And you do need help. You cannot do everything by yourself. And you can win from that. And I tell anybody, I mean, look at any professional sport draft, and you'll find people who's drafted number one, number two, number three, but that doesn't mean they're going to be the greatest player. That actually,
right.
in most cases, you got a guy, Tom Brady, that's going to the Hall of Fame, and he was drafted in, like, I think the sixth round as a quarterback,
right.
and one of the best in the league. So
yes.
you never know.
What's interesting about that is I do understand that's important information that you're giving us, that to have the celebrity in the film, because it brings people out. Because if you say somebody saying, oh, yeah, I know that person, let me go and see him in the film. And also to put the reality on us, because sometimes we get stuck, an artist will get stuck in his own creativity to the point to say, well, you know, why didn't the record company get that? Or why doesn't the record company understand what I'm doing? Why didn't the film festival understand what I'm doing? But it's because, you know, the record company and the film festival alike have an agenda.
Exactly.
They have an agenda. But what is really interesting about what you've given us, and something that you told me that I didn't know, is at the film festivals, there is workshops. I know there's networking, but the workshops, so there are workshops at the what else is available there besides the showing of the film and, you know, the people being there and you being able to network? They have workshops, and what kind of workshops are there, and what else is available at film festivals?
So, like, the better film festivals, and I think mostly all of them, but you have some film festivals that just show films and give out awards. But the better ones, the more prestigious ones, what they do is they invite out the top people in, I mean, every aspect of film. Not just film, but everybody behind those closed doors, behind the artists, behind managers, agents. I mean, I got invited to the Penthouse at one to go up there and speak with a big-time agent who had, like, a private session up there. Those are all over the place. But in the workshops, you hear, you know, people sit down and they'll tell you about what people are looking for. So, like, I found out that in Georgia, one of the things that's happening in Georgia, and see, I went back and shared this with all of my Georgia State people, that they're having an issue with, Georgia has a huge tax break that we strategically have done here so that films can come in. They have a huge tax break for shooting in Georgia. That's why a lot of films now are starting to be shot in Atlanta specifically. The film companies, they're having a major problem with getting crew members because they say that Georgia, people in Georgia, the crew members aren't trained properly for film sets. So what they're doing is spending more money to fly out entire crews from Los Angeles, entire crews from San Francisco, from New York, from Chicago, to come out to Atlanta to do stuff that we should be doing. But they would rather spend the money with people who live in Atlanta that knew what they were supposed to be doing. So they're saying that, you know, we got to train our students better. Now, I was trained in a lot of ways, but it's, I'm sure, 100% positive that it's totally different from anybody that goes to any Los Angeles film school. That is not even going to be close. So what a lot of the companies are doing now is you got people who something as simple as making mirrors that go into, you know, your costume rooms and stuff like that. This one guy that was on the panel, he's like over budgeting a lot of money for a lot of different shows. Tyler Perry shows, Ricky Smiley new show, this guy's up there. And he said people call him all the time on, okay, what is Georgia missing? What do they need? And what they'll do is they'll have their company in New York or in L.A., and then they'll make an office here in Georgia and ship a huge amount of equipment here so that when people look for stuff, they just strictly go to them. And they're making
right.
money off of stuff that we don't have. And that's part of
right.
a growing city. So, I mean, it happens, but that's what's going on. And I learned that from a workshop and a film festival.
Yes. Now, you told us about the Bronze Lens. What is the other film festival that you were at?
I went to Bronze Lens. I went to the Atlanta Film Festival. And the Atlanta Film Festival had a lot of international films. They actually, like, have a, if you went there in a specific category, I forget which category that is, you're up for the Oscars to look at you. And you have certain
yeah.
film festivals that are specific to that. And then out in L.A., I'm waiting on my response back from the Pan-African Film Festival, as well as in New York, Tribeca. In St. Louis, there's another film festival that goes from, it starts in St. Louis, but then it's in three different countries in the world. And, I mean, things are looking pretty good.
When you do the film festivals and you get accepted, then you actually go out to the film festival to participate. You don't have to do that, right?
No, you don't have to. Sometimes they'll invite you. Sometimes they will pay for you to come, depending on, you know, the prestige of your film. It's a lot. Each one is different. But definitely for a lot of them, it's better to go to build those relationships. Because what happens is, when you build the relationships, and nowadays with social media, when you have somebody on your email contact list, on your Facebook page, on your Twitter, the next project that you put out, you know, you still have those contacts. And if you have people that become fans of your work, you know, it's less work that you have to do to get your stuff out, because people will, if they're a fan of your work, they'll send it out to other people. Like, you got to see this guy's films. Just,
right.
And they'll invite you out to things. So you need those contacts.
I'm going to ask you about a couple of contacts, in particular a brother who has done a great job as far as forewarning or getting his film out, and that is Kasim Basir. Have you
mm-hmm.
had an opportunity to communicate with him? And what can you tell us about that?
I met him. He had he put out his movie Muslim. He's on my Facebook friends list. And we have mutual friends. His brother, I believe, went to W.D. Muhammad High School. When he came out here for a conference, me and him spoke. We spoke about I know the next film that he was pitching was a film about a guy who something, an event happens, and he can make one of two decisions, and each decision has a different impact on his life, and it takes it in two different directions, and you see both of those directions that it takes depending on which one, which of the two. The beautiful thing about it is when you have diversity in film, and there's room for all of us, just coming from a Muslim background, being Muslim, the way that you tell the story is going to be different. For instance, in my film, Ibana, now mind you, this is a film that's being nominated and all kinds of people are seeing it, but the very beginning of the film, and I can say this, the beginning of the film is a quote, and it's a quote from Imam W.D. Muhammad, and you see that. 15 seconds of the film, there's a quote from Imam Muhammad speaking on diversity, and then it says Imam Muhammad. Now, in all these other films that you see, you'll see quotes, and it'll be from whoever that filmmaker wants. But it starts off with my community, and then it goes into a whole other story. This movie is not rooted in Islam or based in, you know, I wouldn't say it's a Muslim film. By no means, it's not that. But you see us in it, and you see certain thoughts. You see the different way of reacting or just being in our thought process, or at least one particular Muslim's thought process through things. And that's what you get. So when for Qasim to come out with, you know, a movie called Muslim, you know, everybody's not going to take the time out to do that. But a Muslim, and then a good Muslim filmmaker, he's going to think, that's what he's going to think. He's not going to hide his people. So for me, I was proud of him. Like, keep doing your thing, man. And you know, if we find something to link up on, we'll link up on it. I'm all for it. I'm with it. I hope the movie idea that he pitched, that he's working on it. And I know filmmakers, man, we don't stop. I know he's doing it right now, or he ain't stopped thinking about it, or he's working on it.
Well, alhamdulillah, my brother, Amir, I thank you so very much for taking the time, man, to talk to us, man. You definitely dropped a lot of jewels. Not only to drop the jewels, but you actually filled out the circle to let us know who Amir Muhammad is, a member of the Muslim American Media Alliance, and you are a person that we should support in the Muslim community. Let me ask you, have you put your film on a DVD where it can be purchased?
Not yet, because when you're running through the film festival circuit, you have there's rules. And if your film is sold or put on the internet, you'll be disqualified automatically from some of the major ones.
Yes, that's right. That's correct. That's correct. I forgot about that, but that's true. But I can't wait to see it, so I'm really interested, and I'm sure that everybody that listens to this show will definitely want to see Ibana. You've done an excellent job of promoting it and telling us about it, and you've piqued my interest, and I'm sure other people's interest will be piqued. Again, Amir, we thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us on Meet the Muslims and being a member of the Muslim American Media Alliance. We pray that Allah will continue to bless you. Any parting thoughts?
You know, anybody that's out there that has creative talent, I know a lot of people tell a lot of people to go, you know, for the money, be a doctor, be a lawyer, and we need all of those things, but I think there needs to be more of us that are in the creative field that's equally as important as any other field that you can go in. So don't let people scare you about money and different things like that. Just keep the creative thoughts coming.
Alhamdulillah. Again, we thank you. This has been William Kareem with Amir Muhammad, the creator of the film Ibana, and we pray that Allah continue to bless you, and we look forward to seeing some of your work in the future, my brother. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Wa alaikum assalam.
Thank you for listening to Muslim American Media Alliance right here on A New Day for Al-Islam in America Community Radio.
Good show, man. Great show.